The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Download their top-rated app, sign up using promo code RTRS, and brought to you by Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Get yours at bigbarker.com/Ricky, LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged. Kinetic Skateboarding, get 9.1% off your first order with promo code Dave Silver. And Stateside Urban Craft Vodka, the official sponsor of the Corner 3 newsletter, statesidevodka.com. On the show today, the Sixers keep rolling. The magic number is 2 to clinch home court in the Eastern Conference. That's right, 2. The Sixers' most important executive gets a big profile in the Wall Street Journal. We'll talk about that. And someone in the mailbag is actually pessimistic about one specific Sixers player in the playoffs. It is not Ben Simmons. We'll talk about that as well. Before we get going, a thanks to the Sixers. That's right, the Sixers PR, communications, and marketing staff were always... the front office has their different opinions about us at different times, but those folks in communications are always very helpful. And we have a Ricky listener named Justin, who is a active duty Army member. He's been in the Army for 11 years, actually helped us with the tanks versus babies debate. And his house burned down a few weeks ago. And he's doing okay. Some armed services groups helped him out with, like, he's getting back on his feet. We sent him a big barker for his dog, who ended up in the hospital. But all he wanted to do before he headed out back to active duty next week was take his girlfriend to her first Sixers game. And the Sixers hooked him up with great tickets for the game against New Orleans. I forget which game it was, but they hooked him up. So thank you to the Sixers, who have always been great when we've asked them for favors like that. So thank you to the Sixers for that. And best wishes to Justin, who's doing great, by the way, doing great. And then as well, Kinetic Skateboarding are great sponsors. We have those Ricky shorts coming, but I wanted to say before they come, I'm a big cargo shorts guy. Kinetic has some Better Living cargo shorts available right now in 4 different colors. Camo, I'm a big cargo camo guy. I actually am. Digital camo, coyote, and olive drab. So kineticskateboarding.com for the cargo shorts. No shame in cargo shorts. None. Zero. Use promo code Dave Silver for 9.1% off your first order. Without any further ado, Amos and the chef.
We were right, y'all. Right, y'all. We were right. Even when it went wrong, we were right.
We were right.
We was right, y'all.
We were right.
So say the name.
Say the name.
Say the name.
Say the name.
We were right, y'all.
We were right.
Even when it went wrong, we were right.
We were right,
y'all.
We were right.
So say the name.
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 Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who has had a week off of the pod without a loss, is refreshed and ready to go. That is Mike Levin.
Hello.
Yo.
They have not lost.
They haven't.
I am in a 15-year-old boy's closet at my sister's house. And, you know, thank you to the Sixers for winning and for the vaccines for working and for so I can drag my ass here and get absolutely destroyed by my nephews at basketball for the first time in a year and a half. Pretty good.
You know, at WIP during the COVID era, we had a couple of times. John Marks had to work from home. You know, there were some sniffles at the house. We didn't want to take any chances. Actually did the show from his closet, and we found that closets were particularly the most studio sounding room in the house because they're smaller and there's clothes in there and all that kind of stuff. So
there you go.
Yeah.
We're pros.
Yep. I needed to read you this. We haven't done an Apple Podcast 5-star review in a while, but I thought this one was so good, I had to read it to you. We're at, what's the number? 2,890 on our way to 3,000. Leave us 5 stars. And subject, this comes from Flan from Canada. Subject line, this podcast is just unbelievable. First off, I love the show. I listen and often left befuddled by the content of the show. It's a Sixers pod, but is so much more. Wouldn't recommend this show to a friend, but I enjoy it myself.
That's the only, if you enjoy this podcast, please don't recommend it to anyone.
Do not, do not.
It's like spreading some sort of, I don't know. I was going to say virus, but let's not do that.
Yeah,
it's like spreading, don't stricken them with whatever we got going on.
Yeah. So quite a week in that the Sixers won all of them. Even the, like, they, there was some consternation with some of them. Every team they played seemed to be missing their top four players. Joel Embiid is the only guy that doesn't take a night off for some reason with the Sixers. But all that said, even the ones that got a little close, New Orleans, Chicago, what other one got a little close? I feel like another one got a little close. Whatever it was, like, they won all of them. They are two wins away out of the four games. Their magic number's two. The magic number is actually over the Bucks at this point, I think, because the Bucks have the tiebreaker with, they have Miami, Indiana, Orlando. If you can't win two of those, like, I would just say just win the fucking next two and then relax everybody for the last two games, get some rest in there. But it's ultimately a successful, you know, stretch.
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to the 2017 finish when they won 16 in a row. But at that point, obviously, Embiid wasn't healthy. And so you just kind of like, they're going to be the one seed. Like, that's barring anything deeply stupid, which is obviously not out of the question.
Knocking on wood.
They're going to be the one seed in the East. And for that to have happened in a very bizarre year like this, when there's reports from every locker room, basically, of how it's like there's weirdness and people are not having a good time and not liking each other, and the Sixers are just sort of trucking along, beating sometimes too close, but beating bad teams, taking care of business, and like having very specific dance routines in pregame warmups. Embiid is very good. Guys play well. There's a rotation. There's guys that are fighting to get into the rotation. Dwight Howard's hitting threes and loving the fans. Like, there's issues. There's certainly not, like, we're certainly not carefree and without really any problems or anything to worry about. But they went in this crazy season 72 games, and they're going to come up with the one seed. And I will spare myself. More myself than anyone else, but from relitigating the process here, I will just say it did work, and we were right, et cetera, et cetera. And we'll do that. We'll do that probably next week
with Jake.
When there's a little bit of a look back. Yeah.
Yeah. Can I ask very quickly though? And I don't want to do it here because I want to do it there, and we have some very important things to do on this pod. But I saw the thing with Twitter is, like, sometimes you'll log on and you'll be like, everybody's fighting about something. Like, where did it start? Like, what's the thing? So I logged on and I saw Sean O'Connor, who invented the lottery party, who I stole it from, talking about relitigating the process. And I was like, I couldn't figure out where it started from, only that you were talking about it. Was it just a tweet of yours that was, that how it started?
Well, yes, and okay. I'm very upset at Sean for muting the word process from Twitter forever, which is, I think, deeply upsetting. I think it's something he'll be happy for but secretly regret forever. They were going to be the one seed, and so I tweeted sort of that they're that
it
worked.
Process work, okay.
Et cetera, and sometimes, you know, the 5-10% of people that disagreed with that then got my mentions and stuff, and everything happened. But I didn't get too engaged, but I got probably more engaged than I should have. But it's just like, anyone that's disagreeing is wrong and acting in bad faith. And and we'll get to it next week.
Yep. Legs mentioned that since you've been verified, you've been that guy on Twitter two times.
I don't know that I was this guy. I think I wasn't like, I certainly wasn't intending on starting any sort of firestorm. It was sort of
just
par for the course for me. And then, the Jokic thing was, That was not, that was totally incidental. I'm baffled by it. That was, I would say, more of like a main character moment. Despite the fact, it wasn't like, there's been, you know, there's obviously way worse version of being a main character than a misunderstanding and a deeply held true belief. So yeah. We'll get to it next week.
So the there's so, like, all you can really, there's so little to take from these games. You mentioned, like, the Sixers aren't a perfect team, and there have been a couple of things that have popped up during the streak, but it's such a weird time in the NBA with the number of teams actively not trying, that which is maybe 85% of the league at this point. I think the Sixers are left in the 15% of that actually are trying. But it's so hard to take anything from any of these games on a grand scale, good or bad. I think that they won them and that nobody is hurt aside from a Furk ankle is the best takeaway. The only two things I took from a basketball standpoint, from a good standpoint, is that Maxey has continued to contribute in a very confident, evolved way, and Thybul has, like, his defense has kept up, you know, just in terms of its effectiveness and you know, really just horrifying other teams. And you know, those are the two basketball things that I took from it. Really, I had trouble taking much else.
Yeah, I mean, I remember in that 2017 season where they won the final 16, they were talking, like, it was a tough stretch for the first, whatever, 66 games, but knowing that, like, it's going to end easy. And it ended even easier than they thought, and that's sort of similar to here. Like, the Sixers, we knew after the All-Star break, had one of the easiest schedules in the league, and there was that horrible run of, like, seven games where it ended bad, but they got enough wins on the front end to not feel like a total disaster, and now they've just had a bunch of. I mean, they haven't played a team at full strength in like 3 months. Like, I really have not.
It's amazing.
I don't remember the last time that they played a team that was a good team that had all their guys. Or, I mean, I think it happened with Milwaukee, but we didn't have our guys. It's just like it just hasn't been there, which is disappointing. But I think, at least for me, builds up the anticipation for the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because it would be. I'm going to open this window so you can see my... Oh, look at that. Come on. My face is glowing.
Ah, yeah. That's great.
And I'm just really super excited for the playoffs. But I agree with you about Maxey. Like, he didn't play in that Pelicans game, and they suffered for it. Like, there's just no excuse. That's a concerning thing. Like, Doc playing Mike Scott over Maxey, because the reasoning being, like, he thought Mike Scott was taller. And...
Can't teach height.
The Pelicans had taller guys. Like, that's just not... Like, are you really worried about, like, Wes Iwundu posting up? Like, is that the offense that they're being geared to? That just seemed like a really stupid decision. I guess in the sense that, like, hey, maybe you knew you're going to rest Simmons or Seth, and you wanted, like, fresh legs for the back-to-back in Detroit. That's the, I think, charitable explanation, so that's why you didn't play Maxey. But, I mean, he played last night and was excellent. Like, 22 points on 11 shots, had juice, got to the line.
Confidently took spot up threes.
Yeah, I mean, well, okay, so he's 2 for 3 from three, and what did I say last, or whatever podcast ago? The three that he missed, Spike, rimmed out. So,
right.
Which basically counts, and I, at this point, rim outs, and I'm saying this for myself also, rim outs should count for, like, one. Like, if you rim out, if it really rattles out, it should count for one.
We gotta get Daryl back. Maybe talk
we'll
about
see,
that.
Yeah.
Role
we'll see
changes.
What he thinks. Yeah. If he wants to help me out with these friggin' hard rims at the park I'm dealing with.
Double rims?
But, what?
Are they double rims?
They are double rims. Yeah.
Terrible.
It's brutal.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I thought Maxey's defense was like electric, basically, like really staying attached and making choices. And I think he blocked Frank Jackson from behind. And somebody asked him, how did you improve on defense over the course of the season, which he has. And he's just like, I watched a lot of Matisse tape, which is just cool. It's just cool. It's cool. These little guys are little dudes. I'm happy. And I think we're at this point. I don't know that Maxey is going to be in the rotation all of the playoffs, but there's definitely going to be a couple games where he becomes very necessary because of his ability to now confidently shoot spot ups and also get to the rim, finish, get out in transition. Just like any time when Ben's not out there, I think I'm going to want Maxey to just pace the team up a little.
a very special Mike. Just sit there for a second. You know, see, we're recording earlier than we normally are, so Mike's very tired. So for our sponsors this week, we're doing something very special with our producer, CJ. Every sponsor, we will play Get to Know CJ. So we'll know a little bit more about you. Are you prepared for that?
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready for it. Thought we were going to get Mike Bivens in, but I guess I'm like a nice third string. Happy to be here.
Yeah. No Mike Bivens yet. Hopefully, maybe next time. Fingers crossed. So the last time, I was going to talk about DraftKings. And the first thing about DraftKings, this is a me thing, is I noticed that the Sixers odds for the conference and for the title actually flattened this week. They went from plus 440 to win the East to plus 350, and they went from plus 1200 to plus 1000 to win the title. So that's just a note from me. But in the Get to Know CJ part of the section of this, we were talking before the pod last week about, or maybe 2 weeks ago, about the recent UFC fight, and it seemed like you were maybe a UFC guy.
So I'm not like a big UFC guy. Like anyone watching this that is, like, they definitely know more than me. I don't know. I guess it was like the Fight Island aspect of things, like watching things without an audience. Like that was kind of interesting to see like how they did it, because they were like one of the first sports to come back. But yeah, like I've been watching a lot of the fights, and then I watched Canelo's fight last night. I know that's boxing, but yeah, I've been kind of invested in it recently.
So DraftKings in UFC, are you would you consider yourself a fighter yourself?
No. I'm I know no one's really ever seen me before, but I'm kind of on par with like Sixers Adam in my like body distribution
in size.
In size. So definitely not a fighter myself. So, but yeah.
The next week. The next weekend, rather, is so DraftKings is the official partner of UFC. Next weekend is UFC 262. So there's big names on it, apparently. I'm not a big UFC guy, but Nate Diaz and Michael Chandler, they're big names, you would say, right?
Yeah. I think the Diaz, I think they're the twins. There's Nate and Nick, I think. And they've fought McGregor a few times, I think. So they're, I think those are like the big UFC guys. Like they're like, they've been in it for a while and they're like, you know, really good. So big names. Yeah. Big names.
Okay. So DraftKings is doing a special thing next weekend for UFC 262. You pick the main event fighter you think will win, and they're giving you 100-1 odds, whichever fighter. So you bet $1 on whichever fighter you win. $100. So you don't even need to know it. You don't need to be a UFC expert like CJ. You could just be a UFC idiot like me and still win $100. By the way, as I mentioned earlier, it's the best place to bet every sport. DraftKings Sportsbook is the best app. It is the easiest to deposit and withdraw. They have the casino in there. So if you're sitting at work, you want to kill a half hour, maybe play a little blackjack. I'm not saying I've ever done that before, but you could do that. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code RTRS. When you sign up, you turn $1 into $100 when you bet on a main card fighter to win. This weekend, or next, this is Sunday, next weekend, UFC 262, code RTRS to turn $1 into $100 on select main card fighters for a limited time. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older. Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Restrictions apply in partnership with Meadows Racetrack and Casino. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. The Thibault, there's been like a Thibault all defense conversation that has happened. And clearly, in terms of effectiveness, you know, what people use are his per 36, you know, rate stats. And obviously, like, I'm pretty sure there's not a more disruptive perimeter defender in the NBA when he's in there than Thibault. But, you know, and historically, there's always been like one guy on the team who is like specifically a defense guy, you know, like the Tony Allen Memorial spot. Like there's room for those. But I think on some level, the reason that there are always players on there who are effective offensively is that being able to stay on, it allows you to stay on the court for 32 minutes or something. So I do think
while his, I have no problem with him making the, there is some precedent with a 20 minute a game guy making the all defense team. And I haven't even looked at the top 10, you know, of who would be on there anyway. But I do think it is fair to say that though you're not judging his offense, being able to stay on the court for 30 minutes a game makes you more effective defensively. And so those things are all tied in. And I wouldn't hold it against somebody who is registering a vote and saying, not that his offense is bad and that's why he's not on in there, but he's not playing 30 minutes a game. And the reason he's not playing 30 minutes a game is because of how he is on offense. And also that Ben's on the team and Dwight's the backup. Like, there's a lot of factors to it. But I do think, like, his ability to stay on the court 30 minutes a game is super important because he will become one of the most valuable players in the NBA if he can do that, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
He hurt his hand yesterday but came back in the game. I think it was either like a cut or a rug burn or something, or a floor burn or something like that. I would love him to get on. Probably, I don't think they're going to give him first team, but I think he absolutely deserves second team. I think he is essentially like the defense version of, like, he's so good and so like game breaking. He's almost like a sixth man offensively, in the sense that, like, you want to give like a microwave scorer, in that you can just give him the ball and let him cook. You can just put him on somebody and say, like, hey, just get us steals, and like he'll do it. And he had 5 steals last night. He gets a pick 6 every game. He'll have, like, come out of nowhere, like, and then save it. He had, like, 2 blocks on this. He had a block and a steal in the same play, I think, against Chicago. It's just like, I mean, he is exactly who I thought he would be coming out of college, and it's great. It's just great.
I had made that comparison maybe mid-season and said that I don't remember someone specifically that one-sided to the other way as a six man in that way. And somebody emailed and said that, like, that was Bobby Jones. And it's not really true, because Bobby Jones was at least a competent offensive player. You know, like, when we're looking at Matisse, it's really like the Lou Williams, Jordan Clarkson version of defense. And it's so strange, you know, like, I can't even think of a comp really.
Yeah. I mean, you just don't think of it that much. You know, it's not like people don't value defense in that way, where, like, essentially, you know, the worst version of Matisse is almost like a lefty reliever.
Yeah.
Like a sort of loogie, weird release, like junk ball type of stuff. But he's so good that it's not like a gimmick. Like, it's not like it's, let him do this one thing, and then if you scout him too much, you can't get him. He's just, like, really anticipates. He hustles his ass off. He's long as hell. I'm really, really excited to see him in the playoffs and see how Doc uses him and stuff. Because, like, there's been this, you know, I think Danny's had a good stretch here. I think his threes cooled down a little bit. And he'll still do some Danny things, God bless his heart. The Pelicans game was tough for that. But, like, he finished with the starting lineup when it was like, well, do you go offense defense with Seth and Matisse, or do you just put George Hill in there and not switch? You like the ball handling of George Hill in those moments, because there was, like, some times when Danny was dribbling and dribbled at, he was, like, at the half court line and almost turned it over, and then they got the 8-second violation, and then there was some bad passes and chaos. But it's the question of, like, because Tobias, Ben, and Embiid are locked in, and so what are they going to do with those other spots? I think it's still going to be whoever's hot in that moment, more even than matchup probably, and what the situation dictates. But it's hard not to argue with, you need Matisse in for defense at the end of games. Like, it just feels like such a waste to, when you need a stop, not have that guy out there. And that's an argument for, okay, saving your timeouts in the second half so you can have a timeout to go offense defense. And I don't know if people like it or not, but, like, it's really if you have Matisse on your bench for defense at the end of the game, like, you have to feel like a fucking idiot. Like, you have to. And so whatever has to happen, whether it's George Hill and Matisse or George Hill and Danny and then Seth and Matisse, whatever it has to be, like, there's got to be some switching that gets Matisse out there, because he's too good and too special to not have out there. Like, Westbrook blocked a Caris LeVert shot at the end of the game in overtime last night, and it's really not hard to imagine Matisse doing something very similar in a short second playoff game that you're just going to want him there, and he's earned it, I think.
To your point about timeouts, like, and as effective as it is on defense, on offense, I can't even imagine a crunch time possession with Matisse and Ben on the court together. Like, it seems like a disaster. But defensively, it's just such a difference. Like they would be so difficult to score on, and that consideration is definitely something that we will have to keep an eye on from a coaching standpoint in the playoffs. The ability to be able to do offense defense at the end of games, like they would seem impossible to score on with those with if you could have Embiid, George Hill,
engaged Embiid,
yeah, engaged Embiid
when he's like switching on everything and going all out at the end of games.
I mean, an end of game possession, if you could do something like Embiid, Ben, George Hill, Danny Green, Matisse Thybulle, like it's pretty intimidating, you know, defensive possession. So, now, Mike, this is, you know, I put up a poll on the Ricky Twitter yesterday. And it was what Sixers front office executive, past or present, is most responsible for the team's success this year? And the three options were Daryl Morey, Sam Hinkie, and of course, Scott O'Neill. And only 10% of the audience voted for Scott O'Neill, which I thought was disappointing, especially here we are on the precipice of his second book coming out, Be Where Your Feet Are. And there was a feature in the Wall Street Journal this week. I wanted to read you some passages from this feature and get your reaction to our CEO's, publicity in the lead up to the release of his book in such a widely respected newspaper like the Wall Street Journal that I paid $4 to read this article this morning. Are you prepared for some of this?
No.
Okay. The headline is, "For sports executive Scott O'Neill, failure is the best teacher." Subhead is, "The CEO of the Sixers and Devils thinks, quote, we just don't talk enough about struggles and setbacks." So here's the first quick passage I wanted to read you. Again, Be Where Your Feet Are, out in June, wherever you get your books. Hopefully there's
Everybody talks about struggles and setbacks. That's like the whole thing. That's exactly what everybody does.
It's everything. It is the exact... Anyway, okay. So here we go. Just a quick two sentences. Wanted to see what you thought. This is actually one sentence. Quote, and this is written by the writer of the article. I don't even have it. I'll get
Scott O'Neill.
We're talking. Scott O'Neill. "A natural athlete who captained his high school basketball, soccer, and tennis teams, Mr. O'Neill grew fascinated by the business side of sports during a college internship at a marketing firm." A natural athlete who captained his basketball, soccer, and tennis team. So what I want you to know is when you're seeing that guy in the suit, underneath that suit is a sculpted former athlete.
That's right.
Yeah.
It really is an incredibly favorable article with absolutely, and I did only read the first, 60% of it because I didn't get a subscription and I wasn't going to do it. Although somebody screenshotted it for us, so I read a little bit more. But then that side of the article was cut off and I was like, I'm fine.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough. There's obviously, there's a sad detail about, I think, a friend of his committing suicide and having, but it's just like, and I obviously feel bad about that. There's
terrible.
It's just the most positive article about a person I've ever read. I've just they were like begging him to come on the podcast and they're being so nice to him so that he would like come again. But it's just like, what are you doing? You're the Wall Street Journal. What are we doing? What is this? What is this article? Why was this a puff piece? It'd be an article about me and my synagogue newspaper. What are we doing?
Well, didn't we have one of those? We were in the Jewish Exponent.
The Jewish Exponent.
Sure. Yeah. So the next line, so it follows.
And I think that was more critical of us.
It was. So the next passage followed a note where he lost his job at MSG. And he says, losing the job was a blow to his ego, which he said left him disoriented and depressed. But after months of reading, learning, spending time with his family, and seeking feedback from trusted colleagues and friends, he stopped blaming others for his woes and began looking inside himself. Good lesson?
It's a great lesson. Thank you for that.
Okay.
And I'm learning it myself as well.
Now,
Here is now.
I want you to. This is a paragraph. It's a couple of sentences, but I want you to pick out the thing that I noticed most specifically about this. You know, HBSE is Harris Blitzer Sports and Entertainment. That is the company that owns the Sixers and the Devils. And by the way, we were addressing this last time. Apollo Holdings does not own the Sixers. So if Josh Harris is out of Apollo, it would not affect the Sixers. He might even have more time. But here we go.
Although Josh Harris did just buy a $32 million mansion in Miami. Good for him. He deserves it.
Yeah.
Tough time in the housing market, but good to know you could find a deal still. A really nice, cost-effective deal. Congrats to Josh.
The value of HBSC's holdings have risen fivefold since O'Neal started. The Sixers, once the butt of jokes, are now at the top of the league in the East. But Mr. O'Neal is most proud of the workplace culture he created. The Philadelphia Business Journal named the company the best place to work in Philadelphia 3 years in a row. He exchanges personal notes with new hires and gives everyone the business book, Leadership and Self-Deception, by the Arbinger Institute, which he calls, quote, the greatest book ever written. When he arrived in 2013, there was only one woman who was vice president or higher. Now there are 18, he says.
Yeah, I'm sure he's a beacon for femininity. Personal note, I think they meant a personal note inscribed in his book and left in the welcome package, I think.
My favorite part of that is the note that the Sixers were once the butt of jokes. Now they're at the top of the league at the East. In the list of his accomplishments. Couple more quick passages. This one I thought was particularly good. The pandemic forced hard choices in the face of plummeting revenues, and HBSE suspended bonuses and promotions for executives. The sacrifices made by top-level staffers, including Mr. O'Neal, meant the company did not have to lay people off. Now, as HBSE looks ahead at a season that, quote, may shoot past 19 and 20 in terms of results, having everyone in place to scale back up, quote, looks smart. So, he took a pay cut, saved everyone's job. Now they're primed to succeed.
That's right. That's him. It really is a lesson in that everybody thinks that they are the good guy. Mm-hmm. There's nobody out there that's like, maybe there's not nobody, but there's most people out there are framing whatever narrative they have to do to say, like, I struggled more than most people, and I persevered because only of merit and learning my lesson and looking inward. And now I'm at this place, and I should be beloved because of all the workplacing I've been doing for how good Better Business Bureau in Philadelphia 3 years in a row. That's indisputable. There's no way that's like coercive or anything like that. That is down. There is unbiased, total meritocracy. Scott O'Neal. That's how people want me as their boss. Women want me as their boss. All of them. Look at all my women. Jesus Christ.
And the final bit, which I feel like was written to troll us, honestly. And I'm going to say quote, when I say quote in here, it is in quote. So I don't know if it was his quote or the writer put it there. So amid the strain of a job in which a lot rides on what happens this second, this minute, Mr. O'Neal takes comfort in the quote, longer view granted by his religious faith.
That's right. His religious faith told him to chill out about Michael Carter Williams' future and letting you, okay. All right.
It's Scott O'Neal who is really into the long view. That's him. Yeah. God bless him.
It really is an article of someone who works on, like, I don't know, Breaking Bad and is like a PA or like a production coordinator. Let's give him a little bit of results. A production coordinator. And like they're from, I don't know, Wyoming, and the Casper, Wyoming newspaper is talking about how the production coordinator is really so responsible for how good this show is.
Except that in this case, in that case, nobody would see it, right? So the town could celebrate this person,
sure.
And it would go on.
Yeah, and
in
they
this
deserve
case,
it.
Yeah, and in the, yeah, like congrats to becoming a
yes.
You know,
every show I've ever worked on to my family has been Mike's show, but it's
correct.
Not. And but Scott O'Neill is telling the Wall Street Journal, it's my team, and it's my team, and that was my team, and that's we're doing it well.
But is and that is specifically why when we, like you know everyone who listens to the podcast or me. These are all your shows as well, but every time we say that, you sort of downplay it on the pod because you understand that people are actually going to see it. That is the tone deaf part of the Wall Street Journal article is that people who are going to see this, you know, especially our people, the 9 million people who tweeted it at us or emailed it to us. So thank you. I think it's great. I recommend everybody do the free month of Wall Street Journal to read it, screenshot it, and learn from your trials and tribulations as you
great.
Move through. The Hard to Stomach YouTube comment of the week is brought to us by Stateside Urban Craft Vodka. The big news, the rights to Ricky Sanchez playoff pack at statesidevodka.com. Here's what you get. You get a bottle of Stateside, which is laser engraved with playoffs 21, only counts if we win. So you get that, the commemorative bottle of Stateside full of wonderful Stateside vodka. You get the Rocks glass, which if you're looking on YouTube, is these dope glasses that are like made out of the bottle, which is great. And you get the recipe card emblazoned with our logo and Alonzo's favorite drink, which we are calling Price Went Up, which is Stateside, Cran, and a squeeze of lime on the rocks. You get all that. It's $39.99. It's limited. It's basically like the cost of Stateside. Plus you get the collectible bottle and the rocks glass and, it's Zoe's drink. So statesidevodka.com, you can go to our website too and find the link, but you go to statesidevodka.com, go to spirits and it is right there in the spirits and, will be nice to drink along as we go through the consternation of every playoff game. So thank
That's
you,
right.
Stateside.
We're gonna need it.
Yeah, thank you, Stateside. Thank you, Zoe. Two comments, YouTube, because we didn't have a midweek pod. By the way, everything's all right. It's like Mike had a schedule thing and like the game sucked, so we just talked. We took one pod off. Relax. Here's the first one. Please have Daryl on during the playoffs to talk cryptocurrency and the vintage Magic the Gathering cards. When will the Ricky release a series of collectible NFTs? After all, the best ability is non-fungibility. Mike, your comment on NFTs and cryptocurrency.
I think regular finance is stupid. Space finance is even dumber. What are we doing here, guys?
Yeah.
Just it's fake stuff. Let's just keep talking about basketball.
Yep.
What are we doing? People waiting in line for a bad highlight? Come on.
I gotta say, a lot of times I actually liken this to Bruce Springsteen. Because when I say I don't like Bruce Springsteen,
didn't you do this exact metaphor already about these?
Oh, did I?
I think you might have.
Oh well, I'm going to do it again. I mean, we do a lot of podcasts. Every time you say you don't like Bruce Springsteen, his fans go, "Oh, it's because you haven't listened to the right stuff or you don't understand it." And every time I say I think NFTs are silly, or I think they actually, you're paying for the receipt. You are buying a copy of art, and the valuable part is the receipt. Anybody can get the copy of the art. You're paying for the receipt with the number on it. Anytime I say I don't like it, people are like, oh, you just don't get it. And it's like, no, I get it. I also think it's stupid and I get it. So there's enough regular money.
Like, yeah, and this is why we like Sam, we like Daryl, but we're hesitant because this is stupid.
Yep.
And they like this stuff.
Yep. And Abby is completely against NFTs. She likes regular art. She is our artist. Support Abby. As I mentioned, very special sponsor mentions this week as we get to know CJ. So for Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds, the only dog bed on the market, bigbarker.com/Ricky. One thing I do not know about CJ. CJ, are you a dog guy?
Yeah, I've had dogs all my life, like all throughout my childhood. I'm turning 23 in 2 weeks. So this is actually going to be like the first time in my life that I don't have any dogs. I'm more of a cat guy now. I got a cat, so yeah, cats, dogs, all of them. Love them all.
So my first pet was, I didn't have any pets growing up. My first pet was a cat, and it was when I was 29 and living in Chicago. And a cat is a good single guy, on the move, single, busy, on the move, single guy pet, because you could disappear for 16 hours or even a day, and the cat is fucking fine if you're there and fine if you're not there.
Yeah.
Whereas a dog is almost like a child. So it's a little bit easier with a cat.
For sure, yeah.
What kind of dogs do you have growing up? Any good ones?
Yeah, they were all Shetland sheepdogs. I don't know what my dad's fascination was with them, but cute dogs, shed a lot. They were all named after Philadelphia athletes. So the first one was Pelly, after Pelly Lindbergh. And then the second one was Chase.
Ah.
Obviously, Chase Elliott.
Yeah, Chase. I imagine there's a lot of pets and kids named Chase in Philadelphia over the last 20 years. So Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds is the, it's, I say therapeutic, why? Because this is the only dog bed on the market that is specifically engineered and designed to support your dog's health. How? Support. I keep saying that. Support, support, support. It is a real bed, a real mattress, whereas the ones you see in pet stores, the one we even had for Rebel before we got the Big Barker, it looks plush, right? It looks like comfortable. It looks like a pillow. But what happens when you lay on a pillow? What would happen if you put a pillow on the floor and laid on it? It would be incredibly uncomfortable, right? Because it doesn't support anything. But that's where Big Barker comes in. That's where Eric solved this problem. Guy that owns Big Barker had a big dog and was like, I need to get my dog a real bed. And that is what Big Barker is. Go to bigbarker.com/Ricky, bigbarker.com/Ricky. You get the Big Barker dog bed, but you also get the process pup patch, actually two of them. You can iron on if you want. You can just hold as memorabilia if you want. You can do both if you want. You could put on a pair of jeans if you want. Iron it on anywhere. And then send us a picture and we could put your dog in the process pup gallery. I'm not bullshitting you when I'm telling you this is better. It's healthier for your dog's joints. It's been proven by a study at Penn Vet. This specific bed for your dog. A 10-year warranty. The foam doesn't flatten or they replace it for free. So think of that when you're spending a little more, but you're getting more. A 1-year free trial. Not free trial, but 1-year money back trial. If you don't like it, if your dog doesn't like it, they'll give you full refund. They'll even pay for the shipping. It is handmade in the USA. I'm sorry, CJ, you have to do the dog bark. Big Barker dog beds.
Woof.
So here's the, and there's nothing really to say here other than we send our support to Eric. Our next YouTube comment came from Eric. By the way, you can leave one. We do on every pod right here if you're on YouTube. From Eric, my family and I were in a major car accident on April 24th, and my wife fractured 3 vertebrae in her back. She will fortunately have a full recovery in a few months, but in the meantime, it's been a little rough. I didn't listen to the pod until tonight after the Bulls game and wasn't sure I would all the way since it's now 2 games old, but I'm glad that I did. It was a delightful episode. Thank you guys for doing what you're doing, particularly this year for me specifically this past Saturday when you both just rocked it. It was something truly enjoyable that I needed. You guys are the best. So we just wanted to send our love to Eric. Yeah. And stop fucking texting while you drive. Just stop it. Please stop it. Not Eric. Other people. I want to do a jigsaw before we get to the mailbag. It is a listener submitted jigsaw and it comes from a young child.
Play.
I will play this game.
Game play.
I will play this game.
I miss you.
I will play this game.
I'm worried. Play.
I will play this game.
And after the game, they were interviewing him and they said, how does it feel to win the ultimate game? And he said, if it's the ultimate game, why are they playing it again next year?
Michael sent in this jigsaw. It came from a 5th grader in Philly. Mike, here are your 2 choices. Would you rather jump into a pool of lemon juice while you are covered in paper cuts or drink trash juice?
Oof.
It's awful.
Trash juice, obviously, is sort of the liquid at the bottom of the bins you roll out to the curb.
Yep. And let's say it is from not your, I gotta make this, let's say it is from a public bin somewhere.
Yeah, it wouldn't even matter. I think I gotta go paper cuts.
Oh!
I think the It would hurt a lot, but I think it would like cancel each other out a little. I think it would, there would be a sort of equalizing feature to it. And I think after a second it would be not as bad. But the trash juice kills you.
It's fucking disgusting.
You could die of trash juice. There's like oil in there, friggin' toilet cleaner.
I just get
whatever it is. I'm not drinking trash juice.
I wanted to puke. I would drink the trash juice only because I can't even deal with one paper cut alone, much less jumping into lemon juice with tons of paper cuts.
At least it's tasty.
That's a good one. I'll leave it at that.
A little benefit there.
The Lorenzo Brown mailbag, and we will have time, I think, in that space. We have some space in between the Sixers' end of the season and when they start playoffs to really catch up on mailbag, because you guys have been so good. RiceRickySanchez@gmail.com. One basketball, one non-basketball. I want to read you this from Arun? Let's say Arun. Months ago, you read an iTunes review which had the subject line that got cut off. It read, "I've been listening to them for so long, ... The rest of it was that I don't get mad anymore when they're wrong. It was actually a lie. I was mad at you for most of last year. The pandemic and fear that Trump would be elected drained my soul. And for many years, writes Ricky Sanchez, had filled it. When the world sucked, it was hard to listen to hours of complaining about dudes in the front office you wanted fired, complaints about billionaire owners, and Mike's reflexive wokeness. At one point, I got so mad I turned on you. I became a process hater and committed sins against the process. My basketball question is, how would you rank these sins in order of severity? 1, buying a subscription to The Athletic in order to leave anti-process rants in the comment section, actually causing Rich Hoffman to comment back in frustration.
Wow.
2,
Rich.
Agreeing with anything anti-process that anyone on WIP said, including Spike's father. 3, reading articles by Marcus Hayes and Keith Pompey and completely believing them. 4, accusing you of racism for being two white dudes who kept referring to the players in a mostly black sport as assets. And 5, thinking that Al Horford was good and the real reason that the 2020 Sixers sucked ass was because you had jinxed them. Our nation and the Sixers are much better now. I have repented, and Rice Ricky Sanchez once again fills my soul. My non-basketball question is, can I pay my way out of excommunication by donating $160 equal to the most points scored in a game by the Sixers to a charity of your choice? This was a common practice in the Middle Ages. I mean, buying a subscription to The Athletic just to comment and fight with the writers is pretty bad.
Yeah. I like getting a rise out of Rich. He's usually a calm presence.
Yep. Thinking,
I don't know, it seems like you were going through something. If you switch that hard.
Yes.
So I'm whatever you were going through, man. I'm sorry. Yes. To agree with anything that Spike's dad is saying on WIP is something must have gone wrong. So I hope you're doing better.
Yeah, well, he seems like he's better. He did apologize. I told him, I wrote him back, you do not have to donate the $160 to a charity, but donating $160 to a charity is great. So go ahead and do it, and then you're excommunicated. You're not excommunicated anymore. This comes from Shane. Hey, fellas, hope all is well. We were all thrilled Tobias Harris caught fire week 2 of the regular season. He was playing very decisively, pulling the trigger, playing within himself. Not to mention some very sound, if unspectacular, defense. It was a topic of conversation, and it showed in both the eye test and on paper. Through the All-Star break, he played excellent basketball. He has tailed off. We don't make too much of a fuss in the middle third of the season because the consistent productivity was there, but he's falling back into some scary habits. Mid-range percentages falling, indecisiveness from the perimeter, and the productivity is dipping. The second half has dragged his scoring average under 20, and the eye test confirms it. He's not closing games like he did earlier in the year. One of the biggest reasons I had hoped for this season was, holy crap, Tobias Harris is actually taking the necessary leap forward to all-star levels, and executing his role in the offense could be legit, but it's evaporating on us. How nervous are you that we're getting a diminished version of Tobias heading into the playoffs, and what does it mean for our championship hopes if we get a 7 of 16 from the field, 17 points, 0 free throws, kind of Toby?
I mean, I guess I just disagree. I think there was an alarming game. I think the Pelicans, neither Ben nor Tobias took a free throw, right? Mm-hmm. That was the game? Yeah.
Yep.
And that's bad and alarming, yep. And that will happen sometimes. But I think, on a whole, broadly, his numbers before the All-Star break and after the All-Star break are the same. 31 games before the All-Star break in 34 minutes per game versus 28 games after the All-Star break at about 31 minutes per game. And the numbers are almost identical. 51, 40, 89 before, yeah. 52, 40, 90 after, 27.5 and 3.4 assists, and 19, 6, and 4. It's like, it's basically the same. I think
I'm actually surprised looking at it.
Seeing how exact it is. I think it's a team that knows how to get points, knows how to get their offense. I think they occasionally go through stretches in the mud, but and against bad teams, I think they occasionally will play down to their competition and be distracted. And they've won 8 in a row, right? It's 8.
Yeah.
And that's nice. There's been things to be, you know, upset about, and I would say Tobias certainly isn't shooting as many threes as I would like. But that is how he goes. He gets that. That's been happening, I think, for aside from the first little stretch of the season, he's been taking fewer, but he's still hitting a good clip and getting to his spots. And I think he's been and has been very continuously solid on defense when he's engaged. But I think against bad competition, the last whatever, some of the games, there has been a little bit of it's fine.
I do think his knee's bothering him. That is the one thing. So I would have told you that the numbers weren't so similar pre and post All-Star break, but you're right. There's a noticeable difference in May compared to April. I'm just looking at the splits right now. April, he was just as efficient, just scoring 17 rather than 22 a game, but only 27 minutes as opposed to 33.
Yeah,
but
they've just had opportunities to sit entire fourth quarters a lot.
But here's the one thing that you mentioned that is very clear. So all of these months have the same amount of games. January has 13, but every other month has 12 for his games played. 63 point attempts in January, 40 in February, 32 in March, 28 in April, and would be on pace for another 28 in May. He has 13 in 5 games in May. It seems actually as he got more comfortable, he was shooting them less at his height, sort of in the middle of the season there. But, you know, he's just not super comfortable shooting a ton of threes, and that's just who he is.
And I think especially as Doc tinkers with the lineup to try to find opportunities when either Ben or Tobias will be out there at a time. So there will be a decent amount of stretches when they're not sharing a court together, and Tobias doesn't have to just be more of a floor spacer. I think that'll continue, but when they're out there together as starters, I do think that he's going to need to just let it fly, because there's still too many times, mm-hmm. you know, over the course of a game when it's, okay, we're trying to really delicately get a post pass into Joel from 21 feet out. And it's just someone's like holding the ball, looking at it for a while, and it just slows everything down. And I think part of that is just running out in transition, and I know that they they like Danny and Seth hoisting threes early in the shot clock before the defense is set. I would like Tobias to be that guy too. He does it occasionally, not as often as I'd like, but yeah, I mean, this is just who he is. But the version of Tobias that is, you know, last year it was frustrating that he wasn't taking these threes. This year he's still not really taking them as much as we want, but he's so much more efficient in other areas of the game that it makes it easier to swallow.
Yeah, I think the one Tobias stuff, and he hasn't, in fairness, it really hasn't been a lot of him this year that was happening with the Clippers, that was working during the regular season, that I just don't think flies in the playoffs, is that sort of pick and roll with him as the ball handler, sort of working his way around the perimeter sort of thing. But he's just been, it's been much more, to my eye, much more ISO into that, 15-footer than that long, 10-second, 8 to 10-second long pick and roll that I just think it doesn't play in the playoffs, really. This comes from Alex. If the Sixers win the championship and Embiid has the chance to mimic Shaq with the quote, "How does my ass taste?" quote, who should he call out? Jokic, LeBron, Giannis, Tatum, Kyrie. Do you have a particular, if you could have Embiid call out one other player if they win the championship, who would it be? Oh, Brian Colangelo maybe would be nice. Player, let's say player. Let's say player.
I don't think that's, I think the, anytime things are going well for Embiid, mm-hmm. he then does the, like, I'm being a good boy, like, routine, where he says, like, I'm not going to say anything bad. I think when he was on Zach Lowe, he, like, didn't say anything bad about Kat or Andre Drummond or whatever. And it's like some of those guys are just so not on his level. So it would have to be somebody like Jokic or Giannis or something like that. But I don't want him to. I'd rather.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like it makes him a little bit.
It cheapens him.
Like petulant and stuff. Yeah. And I think just like being the guy on the court that does like celebrations and stuff, I think is way better than having like doing like after game feuds and stuff. There's a little bit of like fake toughness there.
We can do that.
If any rivalry stems up from a playoff series, which is certainly possible, then sure. But mm-hmm. But for now, there's not anybody out there that I want to be like, let's get him type of thing.
I'd honestly rather see him tear up talking about his his kid and his. The kid's mom and the city in the parade rather than
tell me how my tears taste.
Yeah.
that'll be better.
Though there would be sort of a guilty pleasure in a list of like in a verbal retweet Armageddon of everyone who doubted him at the Jason Kelsey style. Mm-hmm. Non-basketball question from Alex. Who is your ideal first concert post vaccination and what venue? Do you have I know you're not an enormous concert guy, though you do like concerts. Do you have one that you would enjoy seeing?
Probably. I can't think of anything. So I was thinking about, I've seen Dr. Dog live in concert a bunch of times, and I was thinking it would be cool to see them. It's obviously not like a raucous time, but, you know, I'm at my sister's house now. It's just nice to be anywhere else. It's just cool to be in a different place. So a concert is also a different place. That sounds fun.
I have never seen during the COVID era. I have become obsessed with the band Gang of Youths, and I've never seen them. And I would like to see them. I hate festivals. I would see them at a festival. I would see them in a club. I don't care. I just want to see them. My number one concert ever would be to see a Silverchair reunion in Australia, but that's not going to happen. So, so I want to see Gang of Youths. This comes from Dan. Hey, I'm a process trustee in New York, but not in the cool group that buys ads. Basketball question. If Embiid this year was healthy and on the 0-1 Sixers instead of Mutombo, could the Sixers have made it a real series?
Yes.
Of course.
Absolutely. Right. Mutombo wasn't bad that series. He was just like very old and could only do what he could do. But yeah, I mean, like imagine Embiid pulling Shaq out to three and creating driving lanes for Iverson. It's ridiculous.
It would be, I don't think the Sixers automatically win it, but it would certainly be a series having Embiid to put up against Shaq as opposed to Mutombo. You know?
I wouldn't mind like one even mediocre shooter to add to that team because there were so few on that squad. I would like that.
Side note, think about how great Embiid's reaction to the step over would have been. And
I mean, like, Embiid reacting to Dwight hitting that three and then some of the B-ball Paul stuff. It's been cool to see Embiid, like, you know, there's been, over his career, it's been like, you know, who is he to his teammates? He's very, at times very reserved, at times very, like, outward about jokes and online and everything like that, and so it's cool to see him. But there's been reports of like, you know, is he really engaged? Is he involved? Is he just doing his own thing? And I think especially last year, while his girlfriend was pregnant, I think it was especially like, I'm just not gonna be there. He's sort of removing himself from the situation. And this season, it feels like he's like easily having the most fun that he's ever had, both on the court and with his teammates. And it's cool to see that. I love him and I'm happy for him.
As we continue with our Get to Know CJ parts of the sponsor reads this week, LL Pavorsky Jewelers, I think the question is, CJ, are you ready to pop the question to anyone in your life right now? And if so, do you want to announce that during the LL read on the pod?
Yeah, that's pretty relevant. My girlfriend and I make jokes every now and then about rings and stuff, and I always say I'm gonna go to LL. Like there's no one else I could really possibly go to, but for this pod, I'm probably gonna save it. Maybe the playoffs or something. We'll see how well we do, how the moods are feeling.
Maybe it's actually not a bad like sort of stall tactic. If you're not quite ready, you can say, "Yeah, hey, I already have the jeweler scouted out." So it seems like you've done a little work on it already. You know,
exactly.
Of course, we're recording this on Mother's Day. A lot of people went to LL for Mother's Day gifts for their wives, for their girlfriends, for their moms, whatever. We always talk about engagement rings because that's what LL specializes in, but like he specializes in love, baby. So any gift that has to do with love, LL is your guy. I mentioned he's lost almost 30 pounds over the last 6 months. He looks amazing now too. And he wants every experience at LL Pivorsky Jewelers to be just you and him, right? Just like a personal, you know, no pressure experience. And that's why he does it like by appointment. So if you want to make an appointment with LL to pick out engagement rings, like over 200 Writes to Ricky Sanchez listeners have done, like CJ will at some point, 215-627-2252, llpivorsky.com, or email him, lee@llpivorsky.com. As I mentioned, you don't have to go into the store if you're not comfortable with that yet. It's been there for over 30 years. I've been in there since COVID started. It is like remarkably clean. There's nobody in there but you, LL, maybe Jeff, his security guy, his right-hand man, and it's super safe in there. But if not, he'll do it online if you want to do that. Always supports our charities. Providence Animal Center, Coated by Kids. Oh no, you're going to need a thing here. LL Pivorsky Jewelers.
The larger the Sixers win count grows, the larger the font on LL's Twitter feed.
Ah, not bad, not bad. Good job.
Not the best.
Couple more quick ones. This isn't really a question, but I think it would be great too. This comes from Steve. We need Dwight Howard on the pod. Too many questions. What does he eat to be in this type of condition at his age? It's just insane. I would love to have Dwight on the pod. I can't believe I'm saying it, but I think he would be incredibly goofy and would be fun. I mean, you would be good with that, right?
I can't imagine him sitting still for enough time to do it.
And then finally, from Harold, during the Bucks-Nets game on national TV, they showed the route that the Bucks take from their court to the locker room. A large sign on the wall promotes that Wendy's gives a Frosty to every ticketed fan in the event of a Bucks win. Is it time to petition local Wendy's franchise owners in Philly to up their support to achieve parity with the Bucks?
Conflict of interest. Ridiculous. Wendy's must be held accountable.
Absolutely. If they're getting free Frosties for every fucking win, absolutely.
Yeah. Not as fun, I would say, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and then actually this is a good one. Last one. I'm interested in your opinion. This is from JB. Yo, Spike and Mike, basketball question. Who would you rather Embiid clown in the finals, Rudy Gobert or Nikola Jokic?
I mean, probably Gobert because he's known to be clowning on him would mean like... working him offensively, I think.
Yeah.
And Jokic just is who he is defensively, which is like a fine player and a smart player, but not especially skilled on that end of the court. Gobert is also an easier matchup for Embiid on the other end. Jokic would be tough for Embiid because he pulls him away from the basket. And I think a lot of stuff that Jokic does to other guys, whether they're not smaller or smarter or as mobile, but would not happen with Embiid and be a fun matchup for sure. But yeah, I'd rather it happen with Gobert and be like, hey, you're known for this thing and I'm going to prove that you're not actually good at it.
Both would be such an enormous win for me that I can't even, yes, whichever one.
I'm excited to see who comes out of the West. I'm a little bit bummed that we have to do a podcast after every episode, after every game. So I'm going to miss some of those playoff games, but I might try to like set up where I can see the game also and react to it in real time.
Well, we're might as well just say it now rather than do a big announcement. We're going to do the pods live on video after the games, so people could be watching along with you. They'll be on YouTube and hopefully Twitter and Facebook and all that kind of stuff. So, all right, four more games. Only need two more wins to lock up that. It would be nice to lock up the one seed against Jimmy. That'd be good. Against the
That'd
Heat.
Be fun.
That'd be sweet, yeah, right?
For sure. I do want to say they waived Mason Jones, and I don't know why, and I'm upset about it. And this isn't like a Iggy Brazdeikis thing where it's like, oh, well, although Iggy Brazdeikis is playing in Orlando right now. He's in the rotation, but waving Mason Jones is upsetting. I want to know why it happened. I want answers. He's good, and he's weird, and he's cool. So I want to know what happened, if there's anything weird or whatever. But there's no Batue spot, so fill that shit. That's what I care about. So do it. Darryl.
As we go into the one seed, we'll talk to you midweek. Again, sorry for missing the midweek pod. Are you down with TTP?
Sorry, my computer froze. Yeah, you. No. Lick face?
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you. If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you.
If you don't fuck with me,
then I won't fuck with you.
But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking kill you!
Time for Plan B.